Okay, we began studying the Makkos last week. Just again to get ourselves into the mindset of viewing the Makkos. The Makkos was the awesome experience of seeing Hashem's response to Paro's challenge. Or, in other words, it was watching the showdown, watching the face-off between who was up till now considered the mightiest force in the world, Egypt, and its whole battery of sorcerers and gods, against an unknown god, who they took as, alright, another god. What can he do? Paro challenged, who is it? And we are seeing Hashem responding to the challenge. In doing so, what Hashem is actually doing is introducing Himself to us. So we are actually meeting Hashem. We have to note the Makkos, because the Makkos were directed primarily at us. We want to learn who Hashem is, we're watching the Makkos. And there's our answer. We're already after round 3, right? Dam, Tzfardea, Kinim, we discussed last week. And here, this God of the Hebrews has already completely knocked out, humiliated one of the most mighty gods in the Egyptian battery, and that is the Nile. Nile has already been disgraced, bloody, brought to its knees, and not only that, was shown to be a humble servant of this God of the Hebrews, of Hashem, scurrying to do Hashem's bidding and turning against the Egyptians in Makkos Tzfardea. Then Hashem showed them that even that soil under their feet is simply in His hands, when they suddenly dropped and found themselves knee deep in lice. And now the show is continuing. Round 3 is finished. Hashem seats Paro back at the negotiating table and asks him, alright, will you let my people go or do you want more? And besides just the torture, the Makkos themselves, as we've been seeing, Hashem is making a point of humiliating the Egyptians, tearing down what they consider their most solid bastions, is that the word? And also torturing them with the knowledge that everything that they were experiencing were actually just manifestations of the things that they had done to the Jews. Meaning they had actually developed all this torture for themselves. As we saw in the previous Makkos, we'll see now, Hashem was simply treating them in the way the Jews were treated. That was part of the torture. As they suffered each thing terribly, they were doing it with the knowledge of, we cooked ourselves, we cooked this brew. We're stewing in our own brew. Cooking in our own stew, stewing in our own brew, brewing in our own stew, whatever it is. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now we move on to Makkos Ari. We're taking this a step further. So here also, Hashem is first of all showing, you wanted to know who I am. This is part of the answer. Who I am. So Hashem is showing, alright, who you thought was a great mighty God turned out to be a humble servant of mine. The very earth that you stand on turned out to be just my doing. And now I'm going to show you that even things that are so basic that you've never even dreamed of them also depend on me. How many people ever thought of the fact that you're protected by a certain natural barrier between you and the wild animals? If there's human civilization in a jungle area, the animals don't approach the populated area. They keep away. That's a natural barrier. It's not even something you're conscious of. All of a sudden Hashem is saying, you want to know who I am? Here, look what I control. Simply took away that barrier, and all of a sudden Mitzrayim is overridden with beasts. Now, not only is Mitzrayim overridden with beasts, which, okay, that I already leave to your imagination. We don't need to work too hard to describe what that must have looked like. But there are certain things that should be brought to our attention. Because here also, Hashem is subjecting the Mitzrayim. He's saying, listen, look what you did to my children. I'm simply going to subject you to that. One example is, the Mitzrayim, they used to make a point of part of the oppression, part of the enslavement was, on the day-to-day level was, the intimidation, the fear aspect. When the overseer stood over the working Jews and bellowed at them, it was part. We know that, you know, with the Nazis, you know that there was a lot of thought put into that also. There were designed ways of it simply instilling terror. Right? You know, the Nazis had boots that were designed to collect, to make the right sound. It was a thought out terror machine to enhance the whole effect of the fear, well, not just to torture. The Mitzrayim did this too. You had a big, tough overseer roaring at the poor, frightened Jews, which is adding to the whole, not just is it the enslavement and the torture, but that sense of terror. And now all of a sudden, those scrawny Jews are watching while that big, tough, fat Egyptian overseer is cowering behind the chair while there's a bear standing over him and roaring at him in the same way that he always did to the Jews. And all of a sudden he's being subject to those bellows and those roars. And he's the one cowering and quaking. And he feels completely helpless and defenseless. Going through that very, very same feeling. Also, when the Egyptians watched an animal just come along and pluck off one of their children, pluck away one of their children and carry it off. When an Egyptian father saw a great bird of prey come through the window and lift the baby out of the cradle, and he goes diving after it, and it's just beyond his reach. And the big bird is slowly starting to take off. And he goes running out the door, and he makes a jump for it, and he sees the baby, and the baby is struggling and screaming. And it's just out of his reach. The bird is going higher. They cooked this stew, didn't they? And the Jews are watching this. The Jews are watching this. So here too Hashem is showing them. I noted every last detail. And I control every last force of nature. Here's the answer to who I am. Okay. Now, another big aspect of this is that, again, we have Paro here. Right? Paro is the mighty god. Right? We remember Paro. He, in his resume, he wrote, among his achievements were, Ani Asisini. I made myself. That was how great a god he was. He created himself. That's a feat. So, here's the great mighty god. He's the top of the whole Egyptian machine, which was the greatest machine that there was in those days. All of a sudden, we're told that in Makas Arayv, not only were wild animals attacking, but even domestic animals, even animals that are usually calm and tame, turned against them. All of a sudden, Paroi is being terrorized by goats. Can you imagine the disgrace? This was all part of the show. And this is the Paroi. This is part of the idea. Hashem is saying, you said, who's Hashem? I can take anybody on? You're having a hard time handling this goat. And you want to know who's Hashem? That somewhat puts things in perspective when we're considering the match between Hashem and Paroi. This is a person who can't even fight a goat. Okay. Makas Arayv passes. And now we're on to the next stage. Makas Deva. Here Hashem is bringing the point even closer. Here Hashem is showing, I control the life of every last being. This was already frightening. Everything was frightening up till now. Okay, it might have been more uncomfortable and inconvenient than frightening, but here all of a sudden you see all livestock suddenly drops dead, and you realize that Hashem could just as easily simply snuff out the spark of your own life as well. All of a sudden a person sees all this happen, all livestock drops dead, he's still alive. All of a sudden it's really striking home. Hashem's power, Hashem's control over him. Pestilence, all the livestock died. All the livestock that were outside, that were outdoors.
That's domestic animals?
Yeah, yeah. Now here also, we have to note the significance of what Makas Deva was for the Mitzrayim. If we're talking, we're going back to the example, right? Remember our two old men standing outside the White House and yelling how all kinds of curses are going to befall the Egyptian nation, right? So we already discussed these two old men. Now imagine if all of a sudden these two old men are still waving their fingers and they're saying, if you don't listen to what we have to say, wave their hands into the air, and all of a sudden every last motor vehicle in the United States breaks down. Can you picture such a thing? This is what Makas Tever was. Again, in our minds, Makas Tever means, okay, all the pet sheep in the yard died. Not pleasant, but something you can deal with. You have to realize that that's actually what it meant. All vehicles stopped, died. Camels, donkeys, horses, these were all the means of transportation. These were all the means of moving things from place to place. They were a very, very, very integral part of everyday life, of just the regular goings on in Mitzrayim. All of a sudden, they're all dead. People are stranded. Person is riding on his horse, and all of a sudden, the horse drops in the middle of the street. This is what Makas Tever was. But again, the main point here is, now, let's notice also, all the machinery also goes. How do you plow fields? Oxen. And all this is gone. Basically, it's like the United States has been divested of all cars and of all machines. Then what? This is the state of Eretz Mitzrayim after Makas Tever. After Makas Tever, we understand poverty is really starting to set in. The country isn't working anymore. The country isn't functioning anymore. Oh, they still had livestock. They did have livestock. Because whatever wasn't outside was spared. And by this time, there were people who did believe in what Hashem was saying. By now. And they brought their things in. But how much can you pack in? I don't know if it was 90%. I don't know what the percentage was. But basically, the country ceased functioning in a very big way. And Mitzrayim by now is in ruins. When we're thinking about after what we've seen up till now, Damts, Fadea, Kinim, Oroi, and now Dever, Mitzrayim is in ruins. There isn't much more room for destruction. And also, now the point has already been brought very home, very, very close home, that it's not just that Hashem can make your life very miserable, the spark of life is in His hands. This is what everybody's seeing. Now, all of a sudden, people are conscious of the fact that if I'm living, it's because of Hashem's choice. Is there again a different concept of gods, and each one has its different strong points. This is a God who holds the spark of your life in His hands. This is quite an answer to Pari's question of who's Hashem. Hashem says, "Ba'avu zoyseh maditicha." Who's Hashem? The fact that you're alive is who Hashem is. But I could have snuffed you out too, but I'm not finished with you yet. Because I haven't yet finished showing you who I am. You didn't yet hear the answer to your question, Hashem. Okay. So what's next? Next comes Makas Shchin. Makas Shchin, let's appreciate a little bit of what Makas Shchin actually looked like. Again, it was more than just chicken pox of scratching themselves. The Mitzrayim were in a completely impossible state for the week that they had Makas Shchin. First of all, it was boils. Now these boils were all over their body, and you also have to remember that anything, they had different types of boils, anything that worked for one exacerbated the other. So there was nothing they could do. Like we say, there were certain types of boils, of skin conditions, and water is good for. But that extremely aggravated other types. There was nothing they could do. Now, let's note a point. The boils were everywhere. Everywhere includes the bottom of their feet, which meant that standing was painful. They couldn't stand, they had to sit. But sitting was painful too. They had to lie down. Lying down was painful also. The Mitzrayim were bouncing for a week. After picture, that's what was going on. They couldn't stand. They were bouncing from foot to foot. They stood on one foot in order to relay, they went to the other foot. Sitting down was out of the question. When they collapsed on the floor at night, they jumped. It was painful. And also more than that, once again, they're going through the torture of, they see their children. Their children are right in front of them. crying. They're going nuts from anguish, from pain. And the Mitzri can't touch his child because it's going to hurt both of them terribly. So he's just watching. He has his own tzaras too. All he can do is watch. Touching is not going to help. Touching is just going to aggravate things. There's nothing to do. He's sitting in his house, busy with his own business. And besides that, he has his suffering children all around him, and there's absolutely nothing he can do about it. Now, at this stage, things are really starting to become unpleasant. The Shechin looked disgusting. It wasn't a pleasant sight to be. Moshe and Aaron, their skin was perfect at the time. When they came back for their meeting with Paro, when they showed up at the palace, usually Paro at least had his council of sorcerers with him. Right, he had his whole battery there. On that day, nobody showed up. They didn't want to show their faces. Everybody was hiding at home in disgrace. Paro was there looking disgusting, oozing with pus, ready to greet Moshe and Aaron. Can you imagine the disgrace? Hashem is showing you too. Again, like we saw by Makas Kinin, the master race, the ones who made a point of driving the Jews to a situation of being subhuman, now they look more disgusting and more echoing than anybody could possibly imagine. This is what Hashem is putting them through. Now here too, all the different elements of the experience were meant to show how Hashem noted every last thing. For example, the Jews, the Mitzrayim made them mix cement with their hands. Cement involved thorn brush. They used to use thorns, kash, straw, which involves dry brush. A lot of thorn brush and things like that is mixed into the cement. They made them do that with their hands, which meant they stood over them with whips. It hurt to touch, and to drive your hands into it and mix it is very painful. You couldn't bring yourself to do it, but yet you did it anyways, because otherwise it was even more painful. And now the Mitzrayim knew any move they make. Mamish going through the same thing. Darned if you do, darned if you don't. Right? Should I switch positions? I can't bear to stay in my position now. But I know that switching position is going to be excruciating. This is what they were going through for a week. Shifting one position to the other, trying as gingerly as they could to lean without pushing down weight. This was Makas Shechin. Okay. Now, finally, we already see Mitzrayim is already ravaged after the previous Makas. On top of everything else, at least up till now, people were people. Now, Mitzrayim is a bunch of... Makas Shechin is past. But now Mitzrayim is a bunch of scarred... It's a scarred nation. Everybody's walking around scarred on top of all the rest of the wreckage that Mitzrayim looked like at this point. Right? Again, the answer of who is this God of the Hebrews? Look at Mitzrayim now. Scarred people in a wrecked land which is simply dysfunctional. And this is only after round 6. There are 10 rounds. Undoubtedly, each Makkah left a lot of dead behind. And we know that the truth is each Makkah was also accompanied by pestilence, like we mentioned last week. These Makkahs weren't good for the atmosphere, they spread disease. Mitzrayim was mamish being torn apart. Mitzrayim was falling apart. There's no question that each Makkah left a lot of casualties. Absolutely. It was the hardiest, it was the survival of the fittest. Okay, we're not finished yet. Hashem hasn't finished showing exactly his level of rulership, exactly how in control of everything he is. There's still another thing to show. Moving on to Makas Barad. Again, Paro is back at the negotiating table. He's been through a bit of wear and tear. He's a bit, not in the best shape. But he's back at the negotiating table. Still aching. But he's there. And again, Hashem asks him. Hashem is playing games with him. This is part of the torture. Hashem is playing games with him. If Hashem could have just simply taken the Jews out, nobody would have stopped him. But Hashem makes a point of coming back and asking Paroi, Almighty Paroi, will you please let my nation go now? And Paroi still feels like he's got what to say on this subject. Hashem's asking, he's going to answer, no. Okay. Makas Barad. What happens at Makas Barad? First of all, we have to begin just with the appreciating the fact that Mitzrayim was a nation that never saw rain. Forget about thunderstorms. Mitzrayim never saw rain. Now, there wasn't rain in Mitzrayim. We know that that's how it was. Mitzrayim was what? Today they never had? Oh, okay. It's surprised they're watered by the Nile. No rain. All of a sudden, they start hearing thunder and lightning. This was something they had never appreciated. All of a sudden, they see this the storm developing in the sky. Forget about we're before the thunder. Oh, sorry, we're before the actual hail. They see it starting to develop in the sky. They already know what they've been through up till now. Can you imagine the dread? The world is about to collapse. The sky is about to collapse. The world is simply everything up till now they thought was already the peak. But now the world is simply starting to fall apart. This is what was going on at Makas Barad in their minds. Can you imagine how terrifying this was for a nation that had never seen a rain? And then yes, all of a sudden they're being pounded, mamish, by a bombing of Koil Hashem Bakoyach. They're hearing Kiviyacho, the sound of Hashem, Hashem's voice, the roar of the thunder in a way that they never heard before. They're hearing Hashem's wrath with their ears and they're seeing it with their eyes. They're being pummeled by boulders of hail. This was frightening. But let's note how here too Hashem is getting across his point of humiliating the Mitzrim to the fullest. Hashem made a very, very big statement here with Makas Barad. Let's just understand in a general way that as the Egyptians are starting to see who Hashem is, as the whole world is starting to see who Hashem is, it was really a shocking experience to discover such a God. They had never conceived of such a God. They know that each God has its strong points. A God that's in absolute control of everything, almighty, was something they didn't conceive of. Now, to the Egyptian mind, anybody who knew that the Egyptians were the superior race, to the Egyptian mind, once there is such a God, who would be the natural candidate to be his chosen people? Of course, the Egyptian nation. The Egyptians are the master race. Part of the whole ordeal here was the fact that Hashem was saying, yes, there's such a great God. I'm completely disinterested in you, master race. I'm interested in the underdogs. Now this was brought even more to the fore in Makas Barad, because what did Hashem tell the Egyptians? Before the Makas Barad, Hashem sent a message. He said, everything outside is going to be destroyed. If you care about your livestock, what should you do? Bring it into the house. The Mitzrayim got the message. What Hashem was saying was, as far as I'm concerned, you, all important Mitzrayim, you're just a barn as far as I'm concerned. You and the animals can all just go together. They'll just mix together, the cows, the horses, and the Egyptians. All just one deal. That's what you are in my eyes. The Jews are, not only are the Jews my chosen people, you, great Mitzrayim, are just another animal. Live with the horses. This was such a disgrace. This was such a disgrace. It was such a slap in the face to this master race. This was part of the effect of Makas Barad. It's part of what Hashem is showing you. And now, what's actually happening in Makas Barad? So again, all the crops, everything that was still growing, already all the machinery wasn't working, but the crops were there. All existing crops are being completely creamed, completely destroyed. The ground is being leveled. Here also Hashem is making a point. You built up your agriculture. How? On the backs of the Jewish people. You had them slaving away from you for all these years. Now, we're going to tear that all apart. Bring it all back to square one. As though you never had slaves in the first place. Okay. Makas Barad passes. Where does this leave the Mitzrayim? So, on top of everything we've seen up till now, all the crops, all the growth has been completely destroyed. Mitzrayim has reached a level of poverty that it had never experienced in its history. And besides that, what do the homes look like? Can you imagine what your home would look like after hosting a whole bunch of animals for a week, an entire farm for a week? The homes were disgusting. The outside was ravaged. If we said beforehand that Mitzrayim was in ruins, what's Mitzrayim up to now? Okay, Mitzrayim is given a little time to breathe. This is already toward the end of the winter. Things are starting to grow. And therefore, yes, the crops that had started growing until now were destroyed. But at least it was at the right time of year. The later crops are developing. Right? So can say that only a couple of grains were destroyed and more grains start developing afterwards. So there is hope. At least there will be basic food. Certainly not going to be enough, but it's okay because many people died anyways. There wasn't that many people left to feed. So the little bit of crops that are still surviving, at least we have what to hope for. Okay. Now, another point of what Hashem was showing is that it's not just that I control the Nile, but even the mightier forces of nature, the winds, the atmosphere, those are also just my humble servants. And the three of them are really getting the message. Okay. Fine. Now, Paro is already very nervous. Paro does get the message. Paro is starting to acknowledge defeat. But he has to save face. So therefore, again, what's Moshe asking for? Moshe is expressing things in a polite, gentle way. We want to go out for 3 days to serve Hashem. At this point, Paro still thinks that he's serious. As time is going on, Paro is starting to realize that we're not talking about 3 days. This Hashem is tearing his people away from me, and that's that. But at that point, Paro is still relating to it as though he's still taking this seriously. All this Hashem wants is 3 days of service. Okay, so Paro is back at the negotiating table. By now he's breathless, he's shaky, doesn't know what to do with himself, but he's at the negotiating table. If we know what a monarch was in those days, and we know what a Paro was in those days, we understand that the thought of just saying, I acknowledge defeat, I surrender, simply wasn't an option. Paro had to save face. And therefore, Paro tries to save face, graciously. Paro tells Moshe, fine, I'll grant it, but I'm still making the decisions. So, what's in his eyes is something reasonable. Leave the children here. You want 3 days of service? Go out. Go ahead. But leave the children here. That's all. That's reasonable, isn't it? Moshe is making a point that no. We're going to drive his honor all the way into the ground. No. The kids have to come too. Completely unreasonable. The kids have no part in any form of worship that they were familiar with in those times. What do you mean the kids have to come too? Paro understands that this is a slap in the face, and therefore he responds the way a Paro should respond. And he says, forget about it. Get out of here. Okay. Next, Moshe raises his hand over the land of Mitzrayim, and once again, we're seeing Hashem is controlling the forces of nature. So here, let's imagine the Egyptian. He's sitting in his smelly, broken down home, wondering what the future has in store. He knows that Paro is already ready to negotiate. Right, word has gotten around, Paro is ready to negotiate. He's hoping that they're off the hook. He's hoping that there's nothing more coming. He also can't imagine what more there is to come. Can't be anything more. But he's hoping nothing more is coming. But negotiations failed. And the God of the Hebrews still has his arm outstretched. He's still on the go. And now, we talked about the terror effect. The Egyptians start hearing a wind. Loud winds. Strong winds are blowing. This is very ominous. They don't know what this is bringing, but it can't be good. And this goes on for 24 hours, right? Hashem brought these winds. The suspense and the dread and the terror is building up in Mitzrayim. Right? They're already going nuts before the Makkah even hits, and then it hits. All of a sudden, a huge cloud appears on the horizon. Such a big cloud that it completely darkens the sun. And as they see it coming closer, they start making out that it's not a cloud, it's locusts. Now, we have to understand that a plague of locusts in modern times, okay, the ones that we're familiar with, when locusts hit, talking about experiences that they've had in the Midwest, they can come in schools of 100 billion locusts. 100 billion locusts, which are capable of consuming 100,000 tons of crops in a day. That's what we're familiar with. These things happen. United States, Midwest, our times. That's what a plague of locusts means. Now here we're talking about the biggest plague of locusts that had ever occurred. So 100 billion was apparently small stuff. We're talking about an immense, how can we describe immense if 100 billion is nothing? Cloud that descended upon Mitzrayim, and a cloud of what, right? Before we talked about the Mitzrayim finding themselves deep in lice. All of a sudden now, a cloud of locusts. Locusts are bigger than lice. Locusts is simply descending. A whole coating, a whole layer of locusts is descending upon the people. Descending upon the land. Anybody with good sense, they hid inside. I don't know how much that helped. The locusts were able to get in. But can you imagine a person standing outside, tried to run, but the locusts descended. And now, think about that person in your mind. Picture him. The locusts came down, and now that person is covered with a coating of locusts. And they're nibbling. They're nibbling. And there are more in the air. And he's trying to run home. Well, once again, he's waiting. He's waiting with a D, right? He's wading through them. He can't run fast. He's wading through them. I don't know how high they were. If it was knee-deep, up to his thighs. This is what he's trying to go through. And they're nibbling. They're nibbling at the time. They were nibbling at the people's eyes. This is what they were going through. Here also.
What were the Yidden?
What's that?
In Goshen, what were the Yidden drinking?
The Jews, well, they were in Goshen. They're the ones who weren't. This is part of the lesson of the Makkos. Part of the lesson of the Makkos is that aspect of absolute control. Where a Jew stood, there was nothing. Wherever a Jew stood, there was nothing. Where a Mitri stood, it hit full force. You saw clearly Hashem selecting, hand-picking, who and who. Where yes, where not. Hashem was hand-picking his people. This is what the Mitzrayim are experiencing now.
Yep.
Hard to imagine. But this is exactly what we're talking about. Now, where do the locusts get? Okay, so obviously they're finishing off any. They're shaving all the remaining fields of that last crop, whatever was left from the hail. Right? There's a little bit that they were banking on. Now that's been completely finished. And not only that, the locusts are infiltrating any of the storehouses. They're getting into homes. And now the Mitzrayim are in really bad shape. The only thing that now they have to bank on as far as food goes is the locusts. So now the Mitzrayim, who were able to think quickly, those who were able to think in a crisis, they realized, alright, Rabbi said, this is Tzaris, but this is also supper for next week. So they packed them into barrels and cans. Okay, fine. But as soon as the Makkah ends, whereas back with Makkah's Arab, Tzvardea, we saw that Hashem said, okay, no more frogs, they're all going to die, now clean them up. And they had to wade through frog mush for the next couple of weeks. With the Arba, it was different. All the locusts, Hashem did a favor to the Mitzrayim. They simply flew away. So now, the locusts attacked all the rest of the crops into their stomachs and flew off with it. What were the Mitzrayim left with? Somehow they were still surviving Mitzrayim after this whole story. How that was is a mystery. But we understand what Eretz Mitzrayim looked like now. So Mitzrayim is finished. But Hashem's not finished. There's still more. Mitzrayim, by the way, this is part of Hashem's point. Yes, you enslaved the Jews for all this time. Look, no remnant at all of their work is left. It's as though they were never here. Nobody has ever done a stitch of work in Mitzrayim at all. No agriculture, no nothing. There is nothing in the land. The land is completely in shambles. All the crops have been completely cleaned out. The houses are falling apart from everything we've seen earlier. This is what Mitzrayim looks like now. Okay, but we're still not finished. all of a sudden, now Hashem is moving on with his showdown, we'll call it that. Right? Pari wanted to see how Hashem rates. If there's one God that was recognized by the people of those times as the mightiest of gods, the mightiest of all gods was the sun. Okay? The Nile had already been knocked out of commission. The sheep, they already saw what the sheep were worth in Makas Dever. Right? The sheep went together with all the horses, donkeys, and all the other good things. If there's one God that remained above it all, remained invincible, it's the sun. And now, Hashem is showing, you know what? That sun is also just the humble servant of mine. Hashem gives the word, and the sun simply turns off. No sun. In the beginning, that's all it was. In the beginning, that's all it was. It was just dark. Now, here's part of the torture. The question is, how long is this going to continue for? You have no way of knowing when it's going to end. Okay, maybe the intelligent already figured, okay, all the previous makas lasted for a week. All we have to do is wait it out for a week. And then things will get a little better. But halfway into the week, the makas intensifies. All of a sudden, the darkness turns into a thick darkness. This is what Nehemiah described to me before. You call it a dark hole. This was not just a lack of light. This was an entity called darkness, which simply did not allow for light. Any light was just snuffed out. Not only that, they were stuck in their place. It was thick. You felt it. They were stuck in one place. They couldn't move. And they couldn't move. And at that time, they heard the Jews rummaging around throughout their apartments and checking out what's going on. They're just standing there. They're not able to move. Now, here also, Hashem is putting through the Mitzrayim through much of the experiences that they subjected the B'nai Yisrael to. Again, it's that just feeling of utter hopelessness. Not knowing, is there a future? What does the future have in store for us? What about all the things? You know, Mahamadan the Egyptian was supposed to celebrate his Bar Mitzvah next week. They have no idea what's going to be now. Is there going to be a next week? Maybe we're all going to be stuck here. Who knows? All the weddings, all the futures that we had in store, everything we were looking forward to. Everything now, the lights are all turned off. There is no future. This is the existence that the Jews were living at that time. The Jews knew only an existence of hopelessness. There was no light at the end of the tunnel. And now, this is what the Mitzrayim are meant to feel. And not only that, but once again, the Jews, throughout many years, had to hide their children in secret tunnels, hoping that they wouldn't be discovered, longing to get closer to their children. But they weren't able to. They hid them away in fields. They were separated from their children for long times. Now, the Mitzrayim hear their children around their house, but once again, they can't get close to them. And the Mitzrayim are simply sensing Hashem telling them, all right, cook in the broth that you cook. Stew in the cook that you... Alright, I forgot the expression again. Whatever the expression is. Soak in it. Enjoy. Okay. Now, finally, Pari Cheshas departs. Okay? It departed. Everyone can see again. Again, there's no question that by the time everyone can see, they saw dead scattered all over the place. What's that? That's right. Many Jew Hashem took advantage of Choshech to do a selection process. We should take out a minute just to note that. Hashem was preparing the Jews to take them out to be his people. You had to prove yourself worthy, as we've already seen. Not everybody made it out. You had to prove yourself worthy. Now, in the first place, most of the Jewish nation weren't worthy. The Jewish nation weren't worthy. Yet, the whole point was that Hashem wanted to show them who He was, introduce Himself to Him, and let them draw close to Him. But this period of the Makas was a very, very opportune time to learn who Hashem is, to become excited about Him, and to long to get close to Him. By the time we're holding now Makas Choshech, Hashem was already able to make a selection process. Who internalized it, who didn't, who's properly fired up, who's not, and not everybody made it out. Those who were still the same people as before the Makas, they perished in Makas Choshech. But okay, we're finished. Makas Choshech is done. Mitzrayim is in the worst state it's ever been before. At this point, Pyre really should be head over heels, ready to let the Jewish people go. But Hashem's not finished the game yet. Hashem is still picking them up off the floor like this, sitting him back at the negotiating table, because we're not finished with the show. What's going on now? So now, Hashem says to Pare once again, okay, you ready to let the Jewish people go? Now Pare really wants it to work. He still wants to save face, but he really wants it to work this time. He wants to make Hashem an offer he can't refuse, while still managing somehow to hold on to a little bit of his shattered dignity. So what does he say? You know what? You can go with the women, and you can go with the children. Leave the livestock. There's no reason that Hashem should oppose that. Leave the livestock. Take enough to sacrifice, but leave the rest. Right? Pare is sure. At least now he's on safe ground. Moshe doesn't leave him an ounce of dignity. Right? Moshe says, no, the livestock has to come too. We're not accepting any conditions. So? Right, Moshe adds, not only are we going to be taking our livestock, we expect you to give us some. Pare is still Pare. At the end of the day, Pare is still Pare. He hits the ceiling, and he tells Moshe, get out of here, because the next time you appear before me, you're going to die. And Moshe responds, up till now, Moshe has been dealing with him with respect. And now Moshe's answer is, you know what? You're right. I'm never going to come to you again. Next time we meet, you're going to be running after me. Okay, that's how Moshe leaves Pare. But he leaves with a warning. Before he leaves, Pare warned him. Right? Pare warned him, you better leave, because if I hear from you again, you'll drop dead. But before he leaves, Moshe issues a prophecy. And here, something very, very stupendous is happening. We have to appreciate that up till now, every time Moshe had to receive instructions from Hashem, or had to discuss things with Hashem, Moshe left the capital. He went to be outside of the city, because the capital was a place of such tumah that you couldn't deal with Kedusha there. Moshe would leave the city. There, you can relate, you can interact with the Shechinah. Now, Moshe is in the palace of Pare, right in the middle of all the gook, of all the filth. But Hashem is on a campaign here. Again, like we said before, Hashem is busy taking care of his own kids. Hashem shows up in Pare's palace, and delivers a message to Moshe. You tell Pare that I said. This is what's going on now. And Moshe delivers the message. Hashem has a message for you, Mr. Pare. Right? This is the Hashem who, a couple of months ago, you were asking all smugly, who is this Hashem? Now you know who he is, right? Now you know who he is. I have a message. He has a message for you. Dreadful message. There's no question that Pare was already quaking when he just hears that. Hashem right now is issuing a message to him. Pare is quaking. And Moshe says, Kachatzos halayla ani yotze misoch Mitzrayim. Hashem says, up till now you haven't seen anything. Up till now, I was remote control. At midnight, I am going to show up personally, Hashem says. This was a hair-raising message. Because whatever exactly it meant, Pare didn't know yet, he's going to be told. But up till now, it wasn't Hashem showing up personally. Up till now, it was Hashem throwing darts. Now Hashem says, I'm going to show up. We're going to meet face to face. Umeis kol bechor be'eretz Yisrael. Every firstborn is going to drop dead. Okay. Pare gives a shaky smile. You think I'm scared? He's not scared. Okay? Now, Lemaisa, Pare is still maintaining his tough veneer. But, he was. We have no doubt about that. Pare is still making a point of maintaining his tough veneer. But there was, again, Paray had his court with him. Right? By this time, the sorcerers have gotten over their shechin, they're back in their seats. Okay, Paray had his court with him. There was some woman, an old woman, I don't know if she was a sorceress, I don't know exactly what she was. But there was an old woman who was one of the members of Paray's court. Now Moshe delivered his message in no uncertain terms. He said every last firstborn is going to die. And he said there is going to be a terrible outcry in Mitzrayim that has never, an unprecedented outcry. Meaning, everything you've seen up till now is nothing in comparison to what's coming. And no house at all will be spared. This is Moshe's message. Because every firstborn in every home will be killed. Okay, there was an old woman there who managed to break the effect. Everybody was a bit shocked. Everybody is terrified. This old woman stands up and says, Moshe, baloney. In my house there's not going to be an outcry because there's nobody in my house. There's nobody to die in my house. All my kids are dead. I'm no husband. I'm not an oldest. There's nobody to die in my house. So you've already shown yourself up. Ah, Baruch Hashem. She broke the effect. Pyre already feels good. He's managing to sit up a little straighter in his chair. And Moshe looks at her before he departs and he tells her, you're going to be yelling loudest of all. We're going to hear you before we hear anybody else. Okay. Moshe leaves. Now Moshe delivered his message. Paray is sneering. But the rest of Mitzrayim are not sneering. The rest of Mitzrayim are not sneering at all. But sneering meaning looking at it funny. They're not sneering. They're very, very scared. All the Mitzrayim are in a panic. All the firstborn are in a panic. By now, anybody's willing to bet any amount that what Hashem says is actually going to materialize. And therefore, the firstborns are in a panic. The firstborns come, and they demonstrate. They demonstrate outside Paray's palace. Give in to the man. You want us all to drop dead? Now let's understand. The firstborn...
Firstborn.
All the firstborn in Mitzrayim.
They didn't know?
Yes, yes. The word spread. They all knew about it. Moshe delivered his message loud and clear, and it wasn't kept a secret. And they were all up in arms.
Who did you tell
them? What's that? If you want to go with the Medrash, when Moshe delivered his message, there was a supernatural loudspeaker. All of Mitzrayim heard him speaking. All of Mitzrayim heard him speaking, and all of Mitzrayim were thrown into panic. Now, B'chayrus was more than just technical. Today, a firstborn is a technical thing. In those days, the firstborn, where they were the priests, they were the nobles. They were they were the elite. They were the officials. They held the positions of power. This was basically the who's who of Mitzrayim. So they show up, all the generals, captains, etc. They show up, and they're up in arms. Paray, are you nuts? He's a firstborn himself. But he's not moved. Paray responds violently, probably due to the fact that he himself was very nervous. But he orders the army on them. He orders the army on them, but they weren't slouches. And Mitzrayim breaks, with everything they've been through up till now, Mitzrayim breaks into a massive civil war. All of Mitzrayim is thrown into war. There's battle going on. This is already the beginning of Makas Bechiris, before it even started. This is the effect of Makas Bechiris. What's that?
Second born
a Godol Babayis. The way it worked was, it was going to be the oldest brother from the father, from the mother, even oldest from other nations. Everything. The oldest male, the oldest female, even the oldest animals. Everybody died. Anybody who was first or oldest in any way died. Okay. So now, all of Mitzrayim are scared of midnight hitting. Right? The firstborn are up and fighting. They're trying to break into the palace and overthrow Paray. That's what they're trying to do. Meanwhile, parents who have younger children, younger firstborns, some of them thought of a good idea. The Jewish homes were spared. Now, by the way, what were the Jews doing at this time? At this time, on this night, the Jews were sitting down for a Seder. This is the first Seder in history. This is what was going on. All of Mitzrayim is in turmoil. The Jews are sitting down and having their Seder. Now, many Mitzrayim brought over guests for the Seder. many Mitzrayim brought their firstborns to the Jewish homes, that they should be there, they'll be safe. Right, Hashem said, you smear the blood on the lintel, and the destroyer will pass over the home. Now, they didn't realize that Hashem can get around their tricks. But many of them bought their first home, so most, a lot of Seder tables had a chashev, a guest. They had an Egyptian firstborn or two sitting at their table too. Okay, meanwhile, yes, Mitzrayim is in an uproar. All of a sudden, the Jews are sitting at their Seder. They ate the Korban Pesach. It's midnight. They finished eating the Korban Pesach. At midnight, all of a sudden, all the sounds, the war, the cries, suddenly, absolute stillness. Everything stops. In the middle of war, all the firstborn dropped dead. In the Jewish homes, the firstborn Egyptians at that instant keeled over backwards.
Sorry, the ones brought to the
Jewish homes.
They took the warning seriously?
Yes, they did. All of Mitzrayim except Paro took this warning very seriously. They dropped dead. There was utter stillness for a second, and then there was an uproar, which was even louder than the battling that was going on beforehand. The screams that filled the air were deafening. And what do Mitzrayim see? Mitzrayim see all the Jews are standing on their rooftops. They're standing on their rooftops, big broad smiles on their faces, and saying Hallel. Hallelu Avdei Hashem. That's what they said. They were standing on their rooftops, witnessing all of Mitzrayim in this turmoil. People are running through the streets. And that was when they said Hallelu Avdei Hashem. That's what we say at Hallel, right? Hallelu Avdei Hashem. Avdei Hashem veloy Avdei Paroi. That was when those words were formulated. Now we see. That's it. It's finished. Mitzrayim is a thing of the past. We are now servants only of Hashem. And as soon as that moment hit, the moment of midnight hit, and all those Egyptians did drop dead, Paroi all of a sudden, Hashem took away. Up till now, Hashem was giving him the courage to go on. All of a sudden, Hashem said, like we said before, Hashem said, now the game is finished. This is it. Makas Becheres is the final blow. As soon as the game was over, all of Paroi's toughness drizzled out, and Paroi is charging through the streets looking for Moshe and Aaron. A monarch, you have to realize how unthinkable this is. You can't imagine. Today we're used to pictures of our presidents taking jogs in the morning. There was no such thing as a monarch running through a street. Monarchs were gods. The sight of Paroi running through the street, not paying attention to all of his subjects around him, with a panicked look on his face, wide-eyed, just searching for Moshe, who he was having a hard time finding, because they were sending him in different directions. Now we see, this is the end of the showdown. Right? Paroi said he's ready to take Hashem on. Who is Hashem? Now the answer has been brought to its completion. Now you know who Hashem is. So, by this time, yes, the Jews have managed to see well who their Hashem is, who he is and what they mean to him. By the way, we'll just end with that last note. What's with that old lady? Well, that old lady had kept the tomb of her firstborn son in her home. And she kept an image of him, a sculpture of him, in her home also. At that instant, her son was dragged from his tomb. I don't know if it was rats or what it was, while at the same time his sculpture simply fell apart, and when she saw that, she screamed louder than everybody else. Alright, the time has come. We'll finish another minute of this next week and move on to the next stage of the Haggadah, which is taking all this in and starting to draw the lessons.